This is Jazz of Enchantment, a radio series spotlighting just some of the fine jazz players with ties to New Mexico. I'm Paul Ingles. When Albuquerque-born tuba player, composer, and architect Mark Weaver thinks of himself, alongside the other jazz players featured in this series, well, it's best to let him say it.
I'm kind of an outsider, you know. I discovered jazz when I was 20 and started learning about it, but I don't, you know, I've never taken any systematic study of jazz. I've never really tutored with any particularly well-known jazz musician who was teaching me about jazz. I mean, I'm just kind of stumbling along.
Mark has stumbled his way into some of the more inventive musical ensembles you'd find anywhere, recently leading a group called Brassum, a brass and drum quartet. With cornet player Dan Klukas, trombonist Michael Vlatkovich, Harris Eisenstadt on drum set, and himself as tuba player and composer. Roy Durfee interviewed Mark Weaver.
Is there any sense of isolation in doing what many would perceive as difficult music? Or is there on the other hand, a sort of communal sense amongst the people who perform it and do appreciate it?
Yeah, I mean, there's always somebody that's listening, you know, whether it's the person you're playing with or the person that's sitting out in the audience. I mean, the only time you're doing it alone is when you're sitting in your closet at home and practicing. Actually, when I first started playing the tuba, I used to practice in the closet because it was the only place in the house that I could play in the middle of the night. I could close the door and move the clothes aside.
And with the low tones, too, it's probably is a little easier to muffle, huh?
Yeah, it's probably hearable, but less disturbing.
Than an alto sax, for instance.
Say, or a clarinet. Yeah.
Right, okay.
Violin, sure.
Weaver says he was a scrawny kid who looked completely swallowed up by the tuba he was playing in school bands, and when he went off to college in St. Louis, he never really expected to pursue performance again. But his interest in music was stoked by a certain architecture professor named Leslie Lasky.
I think the biggest lesson I got from him was I perceived how it was that he just lived a really creative life, and he had thousands and thousands of records. That was, you know, that was another way he influenced me, was I would borrow stacks of his records and take them home and record them on my little cassettes. By that time, I was actually, I was studying architecture in school and kind of not playing music very much at that time. And when I graduated, I moved back to Albuquerque and started volunteering at KUNM.
Well, certainly the years that you were doing the House that Jazz Built, it was a very engaging program with a whole panoply of music. You know, what led you to select the things that you played for us back then?
Well, at that time I was thinking of it as being kind of just an exploration or just an investigation into music that developed out of the jazz tradition.
Not necessarily still in the jazz tradition.
Right. Although, you know, I thought of that show as having a threshold of maybe 1960, late 50s, early 60s as to when that music started happening, which to me it was kind of a threshold in the history of the music.
Uh-huh.
And after that point, jazz was different than it was before then. I think before that, it was, for me, one of the most incredible cultural, artistic flowerings in, that I know of in history. And it developed to a certain point, and somewhere around 1960, it's different since then. And so the point of the show to me was, well, what happened to these strains that had come about? What did it spawn, and where? What directions is it going? I mean, you can't. I think you're always wrong if you try to box something in. If you try to say this is what jazz is, this is what jazz is not. And so the idea of the show was, well, let's just explore. Let's see what's out there. You know, we can't. We don't know in 10 years what's going to be considered jazz or not from this period that we're in. So all we can do is just, you know, follow our nose.
Was there a connection between what you were doing, listening and preparing radio, and what you ultimately have found yourself playing and participating in?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, it seemed like after 1960, pretty much anything was possible. You know, jazz had developed to a point where it had shown that it was able to encompass atonality, complete atonality, you know, the whole spectrum, rhythmic music and maybe totally arrhythmic music. Somehow people were able to synthesize a jazz approach with just about any musical element that people had been able to think of, noise elements, you know, things that aren't even notes anymore. You know, I don't know, I just found that fascinating.
What would be an exemplary track of music to illustrate all in one three minute cut everything you've just described?
I don't know. I think Ornette Coleman was a really transitional figure, because his music is very traditional, at least especially when he first started out, and also years later. But you know, obviously this guy is a jazz player. You know, you can't really see him any other way. You listen to him and it's jazz. But he ended up developing a lot of different compositional approaches and orchestral approaches and group concepts that, I mean, the vectors from these ideas led everywhere. You know, you could follow these lines of thought pretty much anywhere.
Was Threadgill somebody that you were listening to a lot of?
Oh, yeah. Boy, I listened to a lot of Henry Threadgill.
Air, going all the way back to Air. I mean, I think you were one of the guys who used to play the trio with him and Steve McCall and
Fred Hopkins.
And Fred Hopkins, mm-hmm. Yeah.
I loved that trio, and I really loved the sextet stuff. I loved his very, very circus project with the tubas. I'm sure something of him has seeped into me, if something could get soaked in, because I've just been in love with his music for quite a long time. It's maybe a perfect example of, you know, a direction you could take the cues that were in jazz. You know, he obviously is operating from that basis, you know, and that's his background. That's but his ears are wide open. And some people, I guess, would call it not jazz, because their definition wouldn't include it. When music is really happening, that's what it's talking about, is matters of the spirit. And what I think I listen for in music is the sound of the human spirit.
And what would be an exemplary track of the sound of the human spirit that you used to play on the house that Jazz built back in the 70s?
play some William Parker music. The man moves me.
We're talking to Mark Weaver, tuba player, composer, band leader. Well, what about Brassum? I mean, this is a project that is so entirely yours that the first release actually said Mark Weaver's Brassum, as I recall.
No, that was. I think that's Vinny's influence, Vinny Golian. He's really adamant that you need to have your name on your projects. He thinks it's really important, and so I relented.
Okay.
I mean, he wasn't pressuring me, but I know that that's his position. He really feels that way.
And that band actually plays all your original music and features still Dan Klukas on cornet and Michael Vlatkovich on trombone and Harris Eisenstadt with all of his other projects. Is he still playing drums for you?
He is. I suppose my favorite is a track that you're not really going to be hearing right now because it's 18 and a half minutes long.
Okay,
but
we can sample.
You can hear
it.
Part of it.
We can sample it. Yeah,
it's it's actually I combined two pieces that we had played as separate pieces, and on the performances on that tour that was recorded for this live CD, we combined them, and it's the meaning of the word Shades of Gray. There's a couple really nice short pieces, I think, but they're both trios. I featured Michael on one, and I featured Dan on the other one. Brown Blue is the one that features Dan Klukas. Thank you. one that features Michael Vlakovich is called In Place Of. That one was recorded at the Outpost. I do my architecture business is I work by myself, and so I end up doing all the different tasks, the secretary, the maid, the drafting, the design, everything, and that suits me. I like being involved in all the different aspects of it. And in music, I really appreciate being able to participate in a lot of different people's perspectives on music. So I might play. I have gigs coming up with Dixieland groups and totally spontaneous, weird, far-out, crazy groups, groups with poets, groups with drums, with no drums, with electricity, no electricity. It's always seemed to me that the more spontaneous the expression, the more direct, the closer it is to being an essence of something. That I think that's the goal. That's what you're looking to do. You're looking to find the underlying truths. That doesn't sound very clear, does it?
If you add in the hand motion of something coming into your chest, I guess I could. It was reasonably clear.
You'll have to imagine the hand motion. And so the things that I do, the things that I write, the ensembles that I might put together, the goal is to get to that point, you know.
How did you learn to compose music, and what does that consist of for you?
I came at it from a bunch of different ways. One of the ways that I came at it was just practicing by myself, playing my horn and getting an idea and working on it and coming up with something and surprising myself and maybe writing it down or maybe turning on the tape recorder and recording it. And
that's what I was wondering about, was notation. Notating it in some conventional way or...
Often. It's often notatable. Sometimes it involves getting just a mood that you're trying to create, and so your composing process is an attempt to make that happen. Sometimes, like I say, it might be a bass line that I come up with when I'm playing, and then the process would be figuring out how to use that and what other lines to put on it, how to develop it into something else, or might be messing around at the piano, or might be listening to a record and thinking, getting an idea off of a record and thinking, I can hear Michael playing a line like this against this, and by the time you get done writing it down, maybe it doesn't even sound at all like the record. If you're intending to be an artist, then it's your responsibility to follow your nose and not box yourself in with somebody else's idea of what's right or wrong, idea of what's sellable or not sellable, of what's jazz or not jazz. But that approach would be how I conduct my life as well. I'm just going from here to wherever I end up going to.
Composer, bandleader, tuba-playing architect Mark Weaver, talking with Roy Durfee. You can hear more from Mark and other jazz musicians with New Mexico ties at our website, newmexicojazz.org. That's newmexicojazz.org for extended interviews, music, photographs, and more. Our staff includes Nola Daves Moses, Carol Boss, and Genevieve Russell. Funding from the New Mexico Humanities Council, the City of Albuquerque's Urban Enhancement Trust Fund, KUNM, and Good Radio Shows Incorporated. I'm Paul Ingalls.